copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
We're talking then in this last part about more common grace remedies for anxiety. And I mentioned I would talk a bit about cognitive therapy, and I think I did in the first part the other day. But so this is a little bit of repetition. But this is probably the most common form of therapy of all, because it's well tested, it's a relatively short-term therapy, it's fairly straightforward to teach. But for example, if you have it's the ABCD of cognitive therapy. You're going out to work, say, and you lose the keys of your car, and you immediately think, "Oh, help! This is a disaster. I will lose my job. I won't get my pay for this week, or I might even not have any pay at all. And my kids won't be able to have food on the table." And the typical sort of catastrophic thinking of the all or nothing thinker comes into play here. So you feel very unhappy and anxious and depressed. So here's the C as the emotional consequence. So what you need to do, and this is what most of us do in normal life anyway, is dispute. You ask yourself, what am I saying to myself? As David says in the Psalms, why am I cast down, O my soul? And you ask, is it really true what I'm believing? Maybe I'm believing lies. What evidence is there for that belief? And as you see that, you come back to your senses and the world begins to look a little happier and less dangerous again. That's the simple form of... Now, there are lots of technical things that go with this that you can teach people how to do it better. So when people are repeatedly anxious, that's essentially what you do. And Philippians 4, this is what Paul is doing when he says, don't be anxious about anything, but do something else. Pray, bring your prayers to God with thanksgiving. So pray and bring thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God, and the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. Finally, brothers, whatever is true, honorable, just, whatever is pure, lovely, and so on, think on these things. So I think he's saying there's a value to positive thinking, Christian positive thinking, and gratitude, thanksgiving. These all push away anxiety, and he says, what you see me doing, you do that too, essentially. So it's not just passively sitting back praying, it's actively doing something about this. And doing things about things you can control and leaving the rest to God. So I think Paul actually is doing, he's discovered CBT long before the psychologist did. This is just built into the very fabric of God's creation. Now, when we come to more serious forms of anxiety, like panic attacks, it's really important to, and I know these are long lists I'm giving you here, but just commenting on them a little bit briefly, that when you hear someone, you hear the story and you retell it back to them. And that's a sort of form of empathy. You're showing them, have I got this right? Is this what your experience is? Let me see if I'm getting what you're saying. So you're developing rapport and empathy, which gives them a feeling of safety and security, that this is someone I can work with in this. You may need to there should be a medical examination, because if someone is having pains in the chest and shortness of breath, they might be having a real angina. There might be a real heart problem. So make sure there isn't one before the next stage. And then you, in talking about it, you may identify a theme like feeling trapped or of shame at being so weak or being out of control that makes people very scared. And then you would identify, so what do you do when you get into this situation? How do you run away from it when you feel it happening another time. So when you feel your pulse beating or palpitations, your thoughts immediately go to, I'm having a heart attack, I'm going to die, once it's happened once or twice. And that happens quicker and quicker the more it happens. So then the psychologists, and this is the more professional work, would try and bring on some of the symptoms, like they'd make you run on the spot so you're beginning to breathe heavily and hyperventilate, or they might spin you in a chair until you feel dizzy, and basically demonstrate that you can have these symptoms without it meaning that you're going to die. What you're trying to help them to do is to go towards what they are afraid of. That's a basic principle in dealing with anxiety. You can't often escape it completely, so you have to go through it. And then you do it in small doses. You maybe help them to have the symptom and then gradually increase it more until they become convinced that they're not going to die. So you're helping them not to be a victim of the physical symptoms and of the anxiety. With phobias, it's sort of a similar related thing. And this is where this woman I'm thinking of who works with children, she helps children to sort of name the anxiety. And what should we call your anxiety? Let's call it Jeremy, or whatever they want to call it, Angus. So what does Angus do in your life? When does he come to visit you? And let's see if we can get a little friendly with Angus. So you befriend him, anxiety is normal in life. It's not surprising that when you were bullied, you felt really scared. That's okay, that's normal. You don't need to feel ashamed of it. It's part of life. It happens to all of us. And when this anxiety comes, and especially if it's an irrational one, obviously being bullied is a very rational fear, but maybe you can externalize it, and so then you talk to Angus. You talk back. So when Angus comes to you and said, you should be really scared, this is a really frightening situation, then you talk back and you tell him, Angus, you go away, leave me alone. I'm okay. I'm going to do my relaxation exercises now. And anyway, I'm bored with hearing you coming back every time and telling me this. This psychologist also calls the amygdala alarm whenever someone gets this sort of surge of anxiety, the oh no thoughts. Oh no, something dreadful is going to happen. And then you can talk to Amy, your amygdala. So you in a way, you're also resisting the all or nothing thinking. So much anxiety comes out of us catastrophizing. So people who, especially perfectionists, who tend to think in very all or nothing terms, tend to feel anxiety because when something's not right, then everything is really bad. So you're helping people to learn skills of handling rather than avoiding. Parents have to learn to stay calm when their kids are anxious. You may give people homework, like what I know and what I don't know, helping them to live with uncertainty. So these are some sort of general principles, but with a phobia, you actually desensitize them to it. So you would... with someone who is afraid of flying, you teach them a relaxation class, you teach them how to relax, then you'd help them to imagine going up in an airplane while they're relaxing. I had one lady who was terrified of pigeons, and she lived near Trafalgar Square in London and had to go through there every day to work. And she remembered being caught in her parents' chicken house her grandparents' chicken house when she was a child, and it had sort of come from that. And we had taught her a relaxation class. We asked her to imagine holding a pigeon, then we brought in a dead pigeon and she held it, and then we brought in a live pigeon and she was able to relax while it was sort of flitting around the room. So it's desensitizing to fear. It's facing your fear and learning another way to deal with it. And then here's a sort of a list of other little things. Avoiding cats. I don't mean literal cats. This is short for caffeine, alcohol, tobacco, and sugar. So I often tell my counseling students, you need to be a nutritionist. You need to be concerned about what people are eating and drinking, eating healthy food and not using caffeine or alcohol to subdue their fears, or nicotine. We've talked a little bit about mindfulness training. Another little trick is you have, you know, certain anxieties. Whenever you feel one, write it down and put it in a pot, a box or something. And then you collect these, and then maybe you come to a counselor and talk about them, or you talk about them with a friend, but just one at a time, not all of them together. If you wake up at night, you know, write down your fears. Then you can talk about them with someone the next day. You don't need to be thinking about them all night. Breathing, I've mentioned, is really important because the deep breathing calms your sympathetic nervous system, which is the fight or flight system of your body. It actually calms, especially what I've called diaphragmatic. By that I mean the sort of breathing where your stomach goes in and out. So you tell children, when you're teaching them this sometimes, imagine you've got a balloon in your tummy. And I want you to inflate it. And then let it go out. Like this. And that sort of breathing, especially if the out phase of the breathing is a little longer than the in phase, has quite a profound calming. I use that when I wake up at night and can't get to sleep. Progressive muscle relaxation would be tightening and releasing parts of your body. So we take people through the whole body from head to toe, with each part of it tightening, hold for a minute, and then feel the tension going out through your fingers and flowing off the chair onto the floor. And then tightening again, and then relaxing. If you do that on every part of the body two or three times, go through the whole body, that's another very effective way to get to sleep. In helping people that they've got tools when they get over anxious. And then you may want to, just in talking about it, identify that sometimes when you're angry and you're afraid of showing anger, it comes out as anxiety. So people who are afraid of conflict, who are really deeply angry inside, often get very anxious. People who are grieving and are ashamed to show sadness, that they find it difficult, they're embarrassed to cry with other people, they often feel it as anxiety, because they're afraid it's going to break out of them. Other sort of practical things are thought stopping. When you keep having a thought, replace it with something else. Maybe there's a song, a verse of scripture, a movement, a dance, a position, anything that can sort of, you can say, I'm having that thought again. And this, the whole idea of this is our brains get conditioned. So you know, we can actually change our brains by thinking differently. This is the whole concept of neuroplasticity. So the more you think a certain thought, the more you will reinforce that pathway in the brain. What we say, what fires together, wires together. So it's like you're always walking on this little path and you make a pathway through the woods. You've got to stop walking on that path or walk on it a whole lot less and go on and create a different path in your brain. It's that sort of idea. And then we would often say, you know, worry actually doesn't get you anywhere. It's like sitting in a rocking chair. It gives you something to do, but it doesn't get you anywhere. So if you've got something to worry about, worry properly about it, and then look at it and say, what can I do about it? I'll do what I can, and the rest I will leave to God. So you worry, as we say, worry well and only once if nothing can be done. And then plan instead of worrying. Do things, take steps, make a timeline, and then don't keep replanning your plan. So it's working against repetitive thinking and catastrophizing. And this is all retraining your brain to think more positively. And I would say sanctification is about retraining your brain in the way God intended you to live. And what we find with anxiety is you need to practice. Persistence. It's like learning the piano. You've got to get it all, train those pathways in your brain. And then OCD is, and I recognize that I'm running out of time here with these things, that there are ways of helping. OCD is a hard thing to deal with. Basically, I would say that there's something has gone wrong in the brain that is making you think these obsessive thoughts. And the way I reframe it to clients is, you know, this is part of your fallen brain, your sinful nature that you did not choose. It's part of the result of the sin of Adam and Eve, your parents, disease in your brain, and you can push back against it by your choices in the ways we've been talking about, and medication can also help to reduce the obsessiveness of the thinking. So there are psychological means of helping, but this is a common thing in the church. There are many people, Christians, who struggle with different forms of OCD, and it's a long-term process. You know, someone who has OCD is probably often perfectionist and somewhat obsessive in their thinking anyway. And when you're talking with people, it's really helpful with anxiety to sometimes to ask them, if I had a magic wand and I could take away your anxiety tomorrow, what would your life look like? And in a sense, do you really want to get rid of the anxiety, or does the anxiety actually help you in some way? There's some reward from it, some benefit from it. Often in people, there's a resistance to letting go of anxiety. So you need to find that place of resistance. Then there are other practical things I mentioned the other day, but exercise, I think, is the sort of number one self-help for anxiety and depression. Certainly it helps me and my tendencies to anxiety and depression. And I don't mean just going for a stroll. I mean something that really gets your heart going 4 or 5 times a week for 30 to 40 minutes. It's good for every part of you. So it reduces your cortisol and your adrenaline and has all sorts of other good effects on your brain and your neurotransmitters that you can see here on this slide. Sleep is really important, but it's difficult because anxiety often interrupts sleep, so it becomes a vicious cycle. So we teach people who are having difficulty sleeping, you know, there are certain basic, simple, common sense things that many people don't do. You need sunlight and exercise in the day. You need to avoid bright lights in the evening. You need to avoid screen time at least 2 hours before sleep, which most people don't do. You can write down your worries rather than spending the night worrying. Avoiding caffeine and alcohol, especially if you're caffeine sensitive. Alcohol helps you to get off, but it usually wakes you in the early hours of the morning. Make your sleep environment comfortable. Develop a bedtime routine, learning breathing and relaxation skills. So there are a lot of, you know, sort of basic little things that you can do. you can change your body to change your brain. So there are quite a lot of research done on the fact that the more you smile, the happier you feel. You may not be feeling like smiling, but if you force yourself to, it actually changes your mood. Relaxing your jaw, standing up straight. You often see people who have been through a lot of difficult things in life walking around like this. When they stand up straight, and this may take a lot of practice, then they feel more confident in life. Laughing, dancing, you know, laughter therapy is great for anxiety. Singing, and this is why, of course, the church and the community of believers is important. Praying together, singing, laughing, all of these things are helpful. And then gratitude, practicing, having a discipline of gratitude. Even non-Christians have realized that this is really beneficial. It's a big thing in the psychotherapy world. Every day you get up and you think, three things that I can be grateful for today, which undermines your pessimistic, anxious attitude. But practice, practice. Being around people, not isolating. We need the oxytocin of human contact. When you hug someone, you get a little boost of oxytocin. Talking to a friend reduces stress hormones and anxiety. Having a pet, a dog, a horse, something. All of these things are common sense remedies. And then, of course, counseling and therapy, which is, if you have it available, if you have good people who can do this. And finally, medication. And in anti-anxiety medications tend to be addictive. So it's not good to be on them for long unless you really have a chronic state of anxiety. Antidepressants are often used for anxiety. They are less addictive and they can be taken for longer. They have their side effects. They're often hard to withdraw from when you do, but they are effective in lowering anxiety when other things are not working. So let me finish here just by reminding you of what the Lord says to us. This is our foundation stone, isn't it? To go back to not being afraid of the things that may threaten us around us, the things that we have no control over them, because God is with us. Even through death, He will be with us. He holds us tight. So we cast our anxieties on Him because we know that He cares for us.